Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, cha, bonjour, namaste, jumbo, bienvenidos. Hey, my friends, my name is Jed Lee, and you are listening to Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from the vibrant and book-loving neighborhood of Reedville in beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. This is more than just a podcast. It's a movement. Our mission is to help families grow stronger, closer, and kinder through the magic of reading together. And we are absolutely thrilled to have you join us on this mission. Help us spread the joy by sharing this podcast with the people you love. Tell your kids, teachers, school librarians, and neighbors that they can find us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, YouTube, wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have an amazing episode for you today. Catherine Pryor is here to celebrate the attack of the Hangries. This is a really, really fun interview that you don't want to miss. And later in the show, Christina Garcia is here to celebrate The Pesky Problem, her debut children's picture book. Hey, families, would you like to share a miracle with your kids? At the Wolf Conservation Center, hope was fading. The endangered Mexican wolves dreamed of a pup, but none had come. Until one tiny miracle changed everything. Meet Trumpet, a real-life wolf pup whose incredible birth brought joy, hope, and a lesson in conservation. Trumpet the Miracle Wolf, written by Leocadia George, is a heartwarming true story that will inspire your whole family. Teach your kids the power of hope, love, and protecting endangered species. Get your copy today and join the wild adventure.
Hey guys, author Ashley Mosley here, and I teamed up with author, educator, and scientist Dr. Michael Wendelspeck, and together we are bringing the wildlife of Belize right into your hands. Kids will meet real animals like jaguars and tapirs in Nacho House Cat and Why Did the Tapir Cross the Street, both books beautifully illustrated by local student artists. In these books, we will learn the challenges that these animals face in the wild. For teachers, Inspired Adventures offers K-5 toolkits packed with age-appropriate activities that connect literacy, science, and conservation. Our newest book, This Birdie Told Me, landed on the shelves on September 23rd. Visit inspiredventures.com to get your copy. Let's keep the adventure going.
This episode is also brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. What a fantastic book series. onceuponadance.com. That's the place to go to find out all about this very moving children's book series. Are you tired of your kids spending way too much time on their screens? Once Upon a Dance offers unplugged storytime adventures. Read, move, and imagine together. Created by a dance educator, this award-winning collection blends movement with whimsy. Perfect for families, classrooms, and libraries. Bring stories to life. Visit onceuponadance.com or order Once Upon a Dance books at your favorite online bookstore. Join us right now from the beautiful state of California. I almost forgot what I was going to say there. Our guest is here today to celebrate her brand new picture book. It's called Attack of the Hangries. Please welcome to the show, Catherine Pryor. Catherine, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Delighted to have you on. This is a subject, if my beautiful wife were here, she would say, yeah, right, he got it. He's disgusting when he's hungry. He has hangries all the time.
Well, I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and been like, yes, I need this book, and or my spouse needs this book, because there's a lot of us out there.
Yeah. So hangry, what happens when somebody is angry because they're hungry, that's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And it is a new word. It's funny. I've been using that word for a long time because I am a lifelong sufferer of the hangries, but it was added to the Oxford English Dictionary in 2018. So it's like relatively new as an official word, but I think people have used it for a long time because it is real.
My beautiful wife first noticed it when we first got married, oh boy, more than 35 years ago. We would go to church together, and we were attending the church that she grew up in, and it was a Spanish mass, and the mass didn't start until later in early afternoon. Like, and there was one priest in particular that would just go on 45-minute sermons all the time, and there were days when I would just sit in the pew and she could hear my belly grumbling, and I would just sit going, "Will you get to the point, Father? Just end it. I need to go and get something to eat, and I'm sorry, I wasted this whole mass. I've just gotten angry. I have to go to mass again."
Well, and it's real. So we get hangry because of stress hormones. I didn't know this. As somebody who's always had this condition, if you will, and then as the parent of two hangry kids, one day I saw a news article about why humans get hangry, and it's all because of our stress hormones. So basically what happens is when our blood glucose levels drop, and I'm not a nutritionist, I'm a like food person, so I had to study a lot of this and learn a lot about it. But when those glucose levels drop, our bodies release adrenaline and cortisol, which are those fight or flight hormones that put us on high alert. And as we all know, being on high alert can raise your irritability. And in some cases, it can cause totally outsized reactions to normal situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've noticed, because I always say to my wife, you're being ridiculous. Of course, I am always mild-mannered. What are you talking about? But if I know that we're not going to be able to eat until whenever, and even if we're not going to be able to eat and we, you know, landed in an airport and everything is closed and we got to sleep on the floor in the airport, I can handle it. But if I'm thinking I'm going to eat at a certain time and then that certain time is coming and it's like, oh, nah, not yet. That's when the hanger kicks in.
Yeah, it's real. And so for little kids who are still learning how to understand things like hunger cues, learning that they need to eat regularly. You can't just play nonstop without eating or you don't have your fuel source. They don't know that. And so they can have this hangry fueled freak out. And nobody understands what's happening. And so that was part of why I wanted to write this book, was just to help kids understand this is a real thing, but there's also things that you can do to help your body avoid the hangries.
So,
and of course, I had to make it fun because it's for kids. So I had a lot of fun, like, coming up with the whole idea and everything, too.
So let's talk a little bit about those things that we can do to prevent the hangries.
Yeah. So, I mean, number one is, and especially for kids, just making sure that you eat regularly. Like, I know my kids sometimes will get so absorbed in what they're doing that they will forget to eat. And there's been times, like, if I've gone to pick them up at school and the teacher's like, oh, we had, like, something happen today. There was an episode. And I would be like, look at his lunchbox when he comes home. And I'm like, oh, well, he didn't eat lunch. Of course. If I was going from 7:30 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, not eating, I'd probably have an episode too. And so just, I really wanted to give educators and families some fun language that they could use to talk to kids about why we're pestering them to eat so often. And then the other thing is what we eat. And I'm so lucky. I have, I've worked in food and farming for years. I have several good friends who are nutritionists, and in writing this book, there was one point I pulled my friend, Erin McDougall, very smart lady, PhD nutrition. I pulled her aside one day while our kids were playing, and I was like, Erin, explain to me why a whole grain keeps you full longer than a processed grain. And she explained this whole thing. Like, if you have a processed food, basically a machine has done the work of your stomach. And so if you have a whole grain, your stomach's going to have to keep like chewing that thing for a while. And it's going to make you feel full longer. It's going to keep you going longer. And she just really explained sort of nutrition 101 to me. And I was able to put a lot of that in the book. So like the types of food that we eat matters. Whole grain, fruits and vegetables with, like some great fiber. And then also I have another nutritionist friend, Cynthia Lair, who's the author of several cookbooks. And when I gave her the back matter to review, she was like, you left out fat. Like fat is a really important part of staying full. So if you look at some of the foods we recommend in the book, like, you know, cheese and crackers, carrot sticks or apple slices with peanut butter, smashed avocado on toast, all of those foods have like a healthy fat that is going to stick with us a long time and make us feel full longer. So I really just wanted to give families some ideas of the types of food that can fuel kids through their day and get us all through this very fun existence.
You know, I'm so glad that you mentioned this and are writing about this. My son is now a very healthy, accomplished adult in his 30s, but I can't do the math. But when he was in middle school, he had a lot of extra energy that his teachers couldn't really kind of figure out. And so we were talking with a nutritionist one day, and, you know, in the course of talking to the nutritionist, my son, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning, and initially, the first 20 minutes or so, he was right there, he was focused, and then all of a sudden, he started doing like backflips in the chair in the office, and I'm like, are you hungry? And he's like, yeah, and so it was like, boom, and so we immediately changed his diet from breakfast cereal to meatballs in the morning, and
Yeah, what dietary changes you can make for your kids to help them have a great day is so important. But of course, kids like don't want a book with a message. So that was the thing I had to be really careful about with this book, because if you are writing a book with a message, I am a believer, like a kid can smell that coming a mile away, right? Like they don't want to be preached to. So I had to make it fun too. And years ago, someone had told me in passing that she imagined the Hangrys as little monsters. And I just thought that was the most delightful image. I'd been carrying it around in my head for years. And when I read that article about how we get hangry, I was like, oh, that's it. I finally have a way that we could do this. And so showing the Hangrys as little monsters that are like bouncing on our shoulders, you know, tugging on her back, making us say maybe the words we wouldn't normally say. Like, it was so much fun to come up with this concept. And then I just kind of ran with it. And at one point, my editor was like, how like nonfiction does this have to be? Because Tiago just drew a picture of Hangry driving a car through a kid's bloodstream. And I was like, oh, I love that. Let's go with it. And so I think the illustrations and everything are fun enough that we'll be able to keep kids' attention, get them excited about this. But also there's enough scientific information in there that for older kids like your son, if you need a way to talk to older kids about why nutrition is important, how what we eat affects how we feel, I hope that parents and caregivers can use it for that as well.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Tiago Buzzi, the illustrator. Did I get the name right?
You did.
I'm on your website, and you know, Attack of the Hangrys just arrived at our post office box yesterday, and they're great. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, it just looked like so much fun. And you know, and then I'm looking at your other books, and they're also, you know, talking to kids about science and breaking down science for them. Beautiful book about butterflies and a cute book about strawberries and bumblebees and zucchini. And they look great. But boy, oh boy, the Attack of the Hangrys, the illustrations and everything, it's like completely different, it seems.
Yeah, it really is. And it was sort of intentional on my part to get back to that. I had started out my writing career, and I can't believe this year I've welcomed my 8th, 9th, and 10th books for kids, which is amazing. But I started out with my first books were Sylvia Spinach and Zora Zucchini. And those books, they weren't necessarily like funny books, but they had funny lines. And I could pretty much like do a reading and know when the kids were going to laugh. And I loved that feeling. But then I sort of got into writing heavier subjects. Like I wrote a book about bumblebee decline, and I wrote a book about challenges for monarch butterflies. And I wrote a book about produce seasonality, which is not, you know, a downer of a subject, but it's not something kids are drawn to. And I was like, I am so tired of going to story time and like making kids sad. I go to story time again and make kids laugh. And so I was very intentional about writing a funny book. And my agent, Adria Goetz, teaches a class on writing humorous picture books. It's an online class. So I took that and she gave us a whole recommendation list of funny picture books. And I went and I checked them all out from my local library. And it was the best month of reading to my kids at bedtime ever, because we were all just like laying in bed and cracking up at these books that we got to read. So I was really kind of studying how authors get scientific information into funny books. And I had to really study it to get back into this funny mindset. But I have to say, I am having so much fun reading this book with kids and promoting this book with kids, because once again, like I'm having that feeling of hearing a room full of kids laugh, which is the best.
It certainly is the best. It fueled my life for decades, and there's nothing quite like it. And a lot of people think, well, you can't study funny. You're either you're funny or you're not. And that's, there's some truth to that, but you can study it and you can learn how to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I was on a couple of weeks ago, I was on a humor and picture book panel at the California Independent Bookstore Association annual meeting. And so I was there with two other authors who were also like writing funny picture books. And all of us talked about how, you know, the world right now can feel like such a heavy place, but that's not kids' fault. And like, it's such a great thing to be able to bring some light and some humor into the world and just let families have fun together. There is no better feeling in my mind than laughing with people you love. Mm-hmm. And so we, all three of us, wanted to create books, and we're very intentional about creating books that would bring that light and that laughter into families' lives.
Yeah. I think it's so important. You know, books that deal with issues are also important, but boy, you know, when you just, I've talked about this in the past, when I used to come home from a tour, I might be, you know, drive 5-6 hours to get home, and my kids would want me to read a book. I didn't want to read a book with a message in it. I just wanted to have fun with my kids, and that's all they wanted to do. And it just recharges your battery. That time spent laughing with your kids is so refreshing and life-giving.
Yeah. And I'll always love a book with a message. You know, just yesterday I did a virtual school visit with a class in rural Illinois, with a school in rural Illinois. And these are kids who, I was on my monarch butterfly book. They're right in the path of the monarch butterfly migration. This is something they're seeing in their daily lives. They live on farms, which could become monarch way stations. They're at a school, which is going to, you know, I mean, it was really cool. It's like, okay, I have this book on this kind of heavy subject that we told in an artistic and sweet way, but these kids are actually going to be able to take it and use this. So I will always be a believer in maybe sometimes heavier books that have very important messages, because the kids can really absorb it in a different way than they can from just hearing their teachers say it. Yeah, I really, after years of heavy, I just wanted to add some light and lightheartedness.
Well, I need to get back to heavy just for a minute, because you're talking about monarch butterflies, and we've had authors come on and talk about this migration, monarch butterfly, 3,000 miles up to New England, down to Michoacan in Mexico, and I'm thinking, a little butterfly flies 3,000, round trip goes up and now it comes back. And they go, oh, no, they go and stay. You know, one goes this far and then they and so clear it up in my mind. A little butterfly doesn't take off from Mexico, fly up to New England, and then turn around and come back. Am I right about that?
It actually takes 4 or 5 generations for that whole trip. But here's the amazing thing. So they fly from Mexico to New England, the Great Lakes region, Southern Canada. And that takes 4 or 5 generations for that, for those monarchs to get as far north as they're going to go. But then the group that goes south from northern U.S., southern Canada, down to Mexico, they do that in one generation. And those, most monarchs don't live that long. They live like a month, little more than a month. That generation that does that huge trip lives 8 months, because then they're the ones who started up again. It is phenomenal. And researching that book was one of the most fun things I've ever done. I actually got to a point where I was dreaming as a butterfly, which is just as amazing as it sounds. So I have loved sharing that, and I loved learning about it. That it's an incredible subject. And when you start talking to kids about it, and also the decline in monarch butterfly numbers, the things that I liked about that is that that's one of the few sort of endangered species that kids can actually do something about. You know, like, you can plant a butterfly garden, they can plant milkweed, they can monitor, they can report their sightings and be citizen scientists. Like, there's so much stuff that kids can do to get involved with monarch that it has been a really wonderful project. And I love seeing how schools are using it.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing to think that a butterfly made that round trip. But when you think about science and nature, it's like, how do these generations know? You know, it's not like they leave a map, you know?
It is one of those great scientific mysteries of, like, the how and the why. And scientists are certainly learning about it, and there's some really cool stuff that we covered in the book. And the illustrator for that book, Ellie Peterson, was a science teacher before she became a full-time illustrator author. So she brought a lot of that into the book, which is fun. But yeah, it is one of those great mysteries. It's this creature. It's smaller than a dollar bill and has a brain the size of a poppy seed, and yet will stop at the exact same tree year after year after year, going to a place it has never been that no monarch has visited since its great-great-grandparents were there.
Yeah.
I mean,
amazing. I'm sitting here and I'm like going, yeah, so we know some stuff, but we really don't have a clue. You know, there's some kind of big giant consciousness out there that's kind of just go here, go there, go back, come back.
I often joke that I write fictional nonfiction because I'm so drawn to nonfiction subjects, right? Like hangries, like butterflies, like bumblebees, like gardening, all of these things. And yet somehow I always seem to fictionalize them to sort of explore that little bit of wonder, explore that mystery. You know, with Home is Calling, when I was sharing it with some experts on monarch butterflies to get that expert review before we went to print, one woman was like, well, the science all seems right, but you gave the butterflies thoughts and emotions, which we as scientists can't really do. That's like, yeah, I guess I did do that. So it's not strictly nonfiction because, you know, I was writing it from the perspective of a butterfly. I just feel like there is so much to explore in this world, and I just want to really make science accessible to kids and fun to kids.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I like about the approach that you're describing is that you don't have the arrogance that I find a lot of scientists have, which is, oh, we know what's going on. We got it. We figured this out. And, you know, like the people was like, oh, yeah, the Amazon. Yeah, that's just been a big jungle forever. And there's no civilization. And now all of a sudden through LIDAR, we're finding out, oh, there's probably millions of people. And this big giant civilization was there. And we're seeing all these remains. And, yeah, we were wrong.
And I will say I am not a scientist by training. I did study food and farming in grad school. But more from, like, how do we get better food into people's homes and institutions? But my stepdad is a wildlife biologist. So I very much grew up around this brain who knew he didn't know a lot of things, but was always curious. You know, I mean, I have memories of him. He would run experiments at our house just for fun. Like, he wasn't in his office. It was not something he was doing because he had to teach about it later. It was just stuff he wanted to know the answer to. And so he was always experimenting and always asking questions. And there would be times where I would be like, why does such and such happen? And he would be like, we don't know. And he was very comfortable with that as an answer, which, you know, I think is so cool. And I think it's one of the things that brings people to science a lot of the time is the fun and figuring out the why and the how. And so I like writing books that helps get kids curious about that.
Yeah, I do too. And that was one of the things that I loved when I was choosing and helping my kids choose books to read together. It was just that there's a lot we don't know. And there's a lot we still have to find out and learn. And I think that's such a as a kid and you're in school and, you know, if you're hearing, well, we've already figured everything out. And it's like, well, then what's there for me to do? I'm just kind of chilling.
I don't know. I have learned so much about the world and the universe since becoming a parent. My kids love science and love nonfiction. Like they will just sit there and read in like a picture encyclopedia for fun. But reading these books that they are drawn to, I know more about the solar system than I ever did. I know more about the plant kingdom than I ever did. There's such a wealth of nonfiction books out there right now. And I have been having really a lot of fun as a parent just getting to re-explore all of these.
Yeah. This is so much fun. So when your kids, I'm curious, when your kids, after seeing the Monarch book and the Strawberry book and the lovely, really lovely illustrations, and, you know, the kind of gentle and fun and beautiful. And what was their reaction when they saw the Attack of the Hangrys cover art with these little monsters pulling some poor kid's hair out of his head?
Well, as soon as I opened the first copy, they immediately took it out of my hands and started reading and wouldn't answer any of my questions. So I had to take that as a good sign. But it's funny because, you know, I have 8-year-old twins. And so they've sort of grown up with this just being their part of their life. Like they go to see mom doing story time at farmers markets and bookstores. And that's just our life. And it wasn't until this book, their third grade librarian read it to the entire third grade. And they were like, oh, yeah. And this is their mom wrote this book. And I think they finally got like, oh, that's kind of a different job than most people have. And it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So that it's actually been a lot of fun because they're finally old enough to understand what I'm doing and enjoy it and enjoy talking about it with their friends.
Yeah. Imagine my poor little kids when their friends found out their dad was a clown.
I can't decide if they would like the friends would be like, what? He's a clown? Or if they would just ask you to perform all the time.
A little bit of both. It was fun. It was creepy in a cute way. When my kids are older and I'd come and I perform and everybody, you know, the older kids all knew and it's like, okay, yeah, your dad, he's kind of good and he's fun. But the younger kids in the school, after the performance, they'd see me in the parking lot picking up my kids and they just stare at me. They go, wow. And I'm like, dude, I was the same kid. I'm the same guy.
Clowns have car pickup too.
Hey, gotta ask you. You mentioned that you have two twins, 8-year-old twins. I was driving my beautiful wife somewhere, and it was around school dismissal time, and we saw these two kids coming up. And my wife looks and she said, "Do you think they're twins?" And they were identical. And not only were they identical in school uniforms, but they walked identically. I mean, every hand gesture, every foot movement was the same. Is that with your kids?
Yeah, it's funny. My twins are also identical, which has been a big learning curve for me. And it is always funny to me. Like sometimes, you know, I'll do that parent thing where you see them walking through the woods or down the street together and I'll take a picture and they'll have like their right foot raised in unison, like in the exact same pose. And I just think like, who else is literally so in step with the person that they're walking next to? Mm-hmm. It is uncanny. There was even when one of my sons was young, I want to say they were about four. One of my sons said to his brother, "Can you hear the thoughts in my head?" And his brother was like, "No, I can't." And I was like, oh, he's gone through 4 years thinking that whatever he was thinking, his brother just thought he was thinking the same thing. It is a very close relationship and a very sweet relationship to watch.
Well, I suppose at one point they were thinking the same.
They were one little organism that split into two. And so I just, when they go into twin land, I just have to remind myself, you know, they're just getting back to that closeness that they once knew long ago.
Adventures in Twinland. I think that's the name of a future book for you.
Okay, I'll write that down.
We should tell everybody where they can find out more about Attack of the Hangrys and find out more about you. But before we do that, what is the next project?
You know, we have, I've had three books come out this year, and we moved states. We moved from Washington State to California. And so I have to be honest, I have not been writing. So I have projects in the works, but nothing that's like written down in contracts yet. So I would say stay tuned until I get out of promotion. This is the same for you, but when I'm in promotion mode, I don't have the same writing brain that I do. I feel like I'm either using that creative space to create new books, or I'm using it to be like, oh, should I talk to you about this book? And what dates do we have lined up? And so I haven't been very good about using the book writing creative side of my brain. But now that we're settled and these books are in the world, I'm excited to get back to writing again.
Okay. So a website where they can find out more about Attack of the Hangrys and your other books would be the perfect place for folks to visit so they can be the first to know when the next book comes out.
Absolutely. At CatherinePryor.com. And I have links to all of my picture books as well as the board book series that we just wrapped up.
Awesome. And I bet the board books are pretty delicious because that's what they're supposed to be done.
Well, that started with something called Hello Garden. And it came out in 2021, which was not a great time to release books. And it was pretty slow seller, and it won a national award. And then suddenly interest picked up. I approached my editor at the time at Schiffer Kids, and I was like, hey, can I do a follow-up to this? And she said, why don't we make it a four-book series? And so it's actually, it's called the Hello Board Book Series, Hello Garden, Hello Rain, Hello Beach, Hello Snow. And it's a family spending a year outdoors enjoying nature together. Yeah. So there's some gardening and some eating and some cozying up by fires with a nice mug of hot tea.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Attack of the Hangrys and the future author of Adventures in Twinland. Our guest has been Catherine Pryor. Catherine, thanks for being on Reading with Your Kids. And whatever the next book is, please come on back.
Thank you. I would love to.
Well, let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is also brought to you by We're Going on a Space Adventure, written by Marie Nichols. This is a Reading with Your Kids certified great read. Blasting off and speeding through space, Graham cheers to the moon and beyond. But Bracken quickly learns that Graham has a fear of flying and that he must manage control of the spaceship. On the moon, they narrowly escape a hideous monster as a crater explodes, and on Mars, they need to outrun Martian creatures or risk becoming their dinner. Hoping to find a friendlier planet, they decide to try Jupiter. Then clank, 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 something is attacking the spaceship. You and your kids are going to love this book. It's fun. It's exciting. It celebrates intergenerational friendships, and we love those. We're Going on a Space Adventure by Marie Nichols. It is a Reading with Your Kids certified great read. This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner Lena have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work, space camp. Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end-of-camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. Before we invite our guest into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org. clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly joy maker. The joy makers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a joy maker. Join us right now from Stuttgart in the wonderful nation of Germany, where their airports are really big. Our guest is here today to celebrate her debut children's picture book. It's called The Pesky Problem. Please welcome to the show, Christina Garcia. Hey, Christina, how are you?
Hello, Jed. I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, delighted to have you on. Christina and I just had a lovely brief conversation about books and Germany and airplanes and the school that she teaches at. And so I know this is going to be a fun conversation. Tell us about the pesky problem. What is this problem?
So the pesky problem is about a problem that a bunch of pumpkins and gourds have with pesky crows that come and peck on them and pester the poor patch from morning until night. And they just want to find a solution to that problem. They want to get rid of the crows. They want to just live in peace, basically. The thing is, one of the pumpkins, the fairy tale pumpkin, which is the boss, she's the one in charge. She doesn't take directions, or she doesn't take help very well. She wants to do everything on her own, and she has all of these amazing ideas on how she can get rid of the crows. And even though there's other pumpkins that want to help, the warty goblin, the oldest pumpkin in the story, he wants to help. She refuses the help. And sure enough, they get into more difficulties, and they don't get rid of the crows. And then as we approach the end of the book, finally the fairy tale pumpkin, she agrees to get the help from the warty goblin, and together they put a scarecrow, a pumpkin and gourd scarecrow together to get rid of the pesky problem. So it's a book about teamwork, about collaboration, about listening to one another, listening to each other's ideas. This is a topic that I see all the time at the school. Kids have a hard time working with one another, listening to one another, build on each other's ideas. So I thought using pumpkins and gourds kind of to illustrate, you know, what children have to deal with day in and day out at school. I thought it would be a fun way to show children how they can solve their problems.
Right. Yeah. We've had many teachers. You mentioned your school. You're a teacher at a Department of Defense school in Germany. And we've talked to, especially to teachers of young kids, kindergarten and the early elementary grades. And one of the things I'm hearing, I don't know if it's true in your schools, but there's so much pressure to get kids reading at a very, very young age, that kindergarten has become first grade. And so the kids don't have an opportunity to do that free play that's so vital to learning how to get along and how to cooperate and how to listen to each other.
So, already in third grade, you know, the kids have to master so many skills and so many standards. And one way we teachers have to have to be creative, right? We have to incorporate all of these social emotional skills into our daily teaching. So regardless if we teach ELA or if we teach math, science, social studies, somehow in there we have to, okay, let's talk about, you know, collaboration. Let's talk about being friends. Let's talk about how do we get along. Yes, the curriculum is a little bit different nowadays. I feel the same that I don't know why it's not as important as it used to be, but it's missing in kindergarten, it's missing in schools, and again, us teachers have to be creative on how to incorporate fun, play, working together in our daily curriculum, yes.
Yeah. I was mentioning to Christina before we hit record that she's teaching in a Department of Defense school, which are found on U.S. military bases all around the world. Yes. And I've had the opportunity to perform at two or three base schools here in the States. And I have to tell you, they were three of the most impressive schools that I had a chance to be at. The kids were incredibly well-mannered and very respectful. And I was just so super. I had no idea what to. The first time I went, I think it was down in Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. And I don't think I had any idea of what to expect. And everything that I encountered was super. And, you know, so I take my hat off to you and the other teachers. And of course, we celebrate military families and military service here on the podcast. So thanks for all that you are doing to help our nation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We need to, you know, we need to think of the children of military family. They travel a lot, right? They move from place to place. They, you know, they come to Germany. They may be here for up to 3 years, 5 years if we're lucky. So they become more resilient. You know, they learn that, okay, I can make some friendships, but then, you know, the time is going to come for me to move again. So they get used to it for the most part. I feel like we have an amazing community here in Germany. You know, people come and go. Us as teachers need to help them just feel safe, feel mm-hmm. comfortable so that they can do the learning, right? And storytelling is one thing that we try to bring into our classrooms, regardless if it's the Pesky Problem or, you know, the Graffalo or whatever other book we read. We just try to make it fun and interactive and engaging for the children so that they love to come.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking how, and I've mentioned this on the podcast in the past, I grew up, basically everybody in my family lived within a square mile of where I lived when I was growing up, which was both fun and annoying because it'd be these adults come up and smack me in the head when I was misbehaving. And I go, you can't hit me. I'm your uncle. And I'm like, another. But, you know, I'm thinking, boy, you know, you're in a military family and you're in San Diego for a couple of years and someplace in Texas for a couple of years. And now you're in Germany, a whole other country with different languages, and you're meeting new kids. You're trying mm-hmm. to learn new language, new customs. That's a lot for a little guy.
It is. It is. And that's why, you know, sometimes they come and just in the beginning, they feel lost. They feel like, what is this? Even though on base, right, it's English language, everything mm-hmm. is more familiar. But we have a lot of families that live off base. So they try to integrate in the German community. And, you know, a lot of them come and say, hey, I made some German friends. Here in Germany, kids are allowed to, for example, go to the bakery and buy some bread on their own. They don't necessarily need an adult. If you're, I don't know, 7 and older, you can actually do some things on your own, take the public transportation to go to school. So for the American kids to actually see that, there is another way, you know, and how people live here in Germany and how kids go to school on their own and, you know, parents don't have to drive them all over the place. They feel safe, mm-hmm. you know, they feel safe to be here. So I would say for the most part, after the shock of being in a foreign country and okay, what is this Germany about? I have to say that a lot of kids, when it's time to go, they feel sad because they bonded with a lot of children from the German community and, of course, with the kids on base. And they have a little bit of a hard time. So once they come, you know, for the most part, from experience, I think that they love being here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Christina, you and some of the people listening to this podcast might be surprised that here in America, kids used to be able to walk to the store by themselves and get on a bus by themselves and do all those things. It seems so unusual that the Germans are doing. But, yeah, sure. And I mean, my dad would send me down the street to buy his cigarettes, which is kind of weird now thinking about it. Hey, what
that
inspired
would not be okay today.
Yes, yes. What inspired you to write The Pesky Problem and become a children's author?
So I'm originally from Romania. Okay. I came to Germany in 2001. And before I came to Germany, I used to spend a lot of time with my grandparents and they had a farm. And back then we did not have any, you know, tractors and all of those big, machines to help you work the land. So my grandparents and I would just go and work the land, plant the crops, you know, do all the work that goes with being a farmer. It was really hard work, but I love being with my grandparents. So there was, you know, and I remember just as a young kid, because, you know, in Romania back then, you had to work the land when you were 7, right? So then I think in my head, I would always imagine stories. I would always, you know, go into a different place, work the land, but in my head, in a crazy way, I would go to a different place and create stories. Fast forward, I moved to Germany. I met my husband. I became a teacher. And I don't know, stories just kind of come to my mind, you know. I remember a few years ago in 2001, when I first thought about the pesky problem, I used to work as a substitute teacher at the school, and the students would ask me, why don't I have a Halloween costume? And, you know, I'm from Romania, so we did not celebrate Halloween at the time. And I said, okay, I'll buy a costume, but I said for next year. So then I buy a costume. It was one of those like scarecrow ponchos. Mm-hmm. I put it on. And then I also found a headband at the store that had pumpkins on top. So I put it on my head and I was like, this is the story. The patch is looking for a scarecrow. So I don't know. That's how the story kind of came to mind. In that instant, in that moment at the store while I was buying a Halloween costume. And again, I just, you know, had the two ladies, Lenka Knutze and Amy DeVries, to help me with illustrations. Mm-hmm. And what was so amazing, all the names that the pumpkins have in the story, I found them. These are the names that the pumpkins have, like Casper Pumpkin and Wordy Goblin and Fairy Tale Pumpkin and Baby Bear, Baby Boo, Munchkin Pumpkin. These are all names that the pumpkins have. So I thought it was so genius to give them those names, and the illustrators, you know, helped me bring the facial expressions to life and all of that. So yeah, that's more or less what, you know, the inspiration that I had to write this book.
Uh-huh. Have you had a chance to read the book to the students that you teach?
I did. So in June, right before the vacation started, my daughter, she was a fourth grader at the time, and she said, I would like for you to, no, she said, can I read the book to my friends? She said, my daughter. And I said, sure. But then her teacher, actually, she said, no, why don't you come? You are the author. Why don't you come and read the story? And initially, I thought it's going to be just my daughter's classroom. Mm-hmm. But when I went upstairs to read to the fourth graders, we had like three classes together, you know, waiting for me to read the book. So they surprised me. I didn't know that she organized. So my daughter's teacher, Miss Thomas, that she organized this this reading for me. So it was a pretty exciting moment for me and for my daughter because she was there listening.
I'm sure it must have been an incredibly proud moment for your daughter.
Yeah, for both of us it was. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me, you mentioned that you have lots of ideas running around in your mind now as you're tending the crop of your students and helping raise those kids. Is there a story that you're currently working on that you can give us a preview of, or is it just not quite ready yet?
So I do, I have lots of ideas written down in my little notebook. A few years ago, my family and I went to visit my husband's family in California. And we went to this beautiful lake. And we were eating something, my family and I, and out of the lake comes this goose. And the goose is missing a webbed foot. And I just looked at the goose and I told my husband, I have another book. I have another idea about this goose who is missing a webbed foot, but she wants to hide her disability because she wants to fit in. And, the lake has this little, this little house, and this man who takes care of the lake has a bunch of shoes there. And the goose thinks that by putting a shoe on, can hide the disability and just kind of, fit in. But the goose also has a best friend, Niles, who he doesn't think that she needs anything. He doesn't think that she needs to hide her disability. And instead of kind of judging her, instead of saying, oh, that's, you don't need to do that, he's just asking questions by why? Why do you want to, does it prevent you from swimming? Does your webbed foot prevent you, missing foot prevent you from flying, from, eating, from all of these things? So, the friend Niles is the one that kind of tries to help her to see that she's not missing anything, that she's perfect and she's, the way she is, she doesn't need anything. So that is one idea. And then I would also like to take other characters from my book and kind of give them their own story, because there's lots of characters in here.
That's wonderful. Well, that story about the goose sounds pretty fleshed out. I think you're ready to run with it.
I just need to type it. It's like I started work a month ago, and I have time is a problem right now.
We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about the pesky problem and find out more about Christine Garcia.
So, yes, again, I live in Germany, so I'm not in the U.S. at the moment, but following on Instagram and Facebook at Christina G. Author. The book can be found on Amazon, can be found at Barnes and Noble's Atmosphere Press, which is my publishing company. And, Books a Millions. So those are some of the places where the book can be found. And if any of your listeners would like a virtual reading, that would be amazing, too. I'm definitely available for virtual readings.
Wonderful. We've had a great time speaking to the author of The Pesky Problem. It's the debut picture book from our guest, Christina Garcia. Christina, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this fun episode of Reading with Your Kids. Thanks for hanging out and spending time with us here at Reading with Your Kids. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please share a link to the show with someone you love and maybe post about it on your socials. We'd be so very grateful if you could leave us a 5-star review. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a moment of Reading with Your Kids. I'm so very grateful to the people who made this show so amazing, starting with our guest, Catherine Pryor. Be sure to check out Attack of the Hangries. And Christina Garcia, please be sure to check out The Pesky Problem. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Tristarity. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. But most of all, we want to thank you. You are amazing. And you are making the world a kinder, more empathetic, more loving place. every time you read with your kids. Until next time, go make some reading magic happen.
Sometimes we feel so far apart, like we're living in different worlds. But kindness is a super spark that connects all boys and girls. If you look inside your heart, you'll see we're not so different after all. Oh, we're gonna melt down the walls that separate. Kindness and love can always conquer hate. Real magic happens when we celebrate all the ways we shine. Together we're great. Together we're great.
We all laugh in every language. We all dance in our own style. Let's hold hands and build a rainbow that can stretch a million miles.
Hate. Real magic happens when we celebrate all the ways we shine. Together we're great.